Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
All right, welcome back. And as we previously talked about, a lot of the information coming out post-COVID has been absolutely horrific. And we're shaking our head and saying, how in the world did all this happen? And can the medical community gain back some of its credibility? This story is heart-rendering and fascinating. I'm delighted to have with us today Scott Shura. He's the host of Deprogramming with Grace's Dad, and realized that he had been programmed to believe a litany of things that weren't true about the medical condition of his daughter, Grace. Scott has a couple of websites. Let's see here. SoundCloud.com/deprogramming. Is that right, Scott?
That will get you to the deprogramming link on SoundCloud. Our main websites are ouramazinggrace.net.
Okay.
That website has all of the research and links to various resources. And then graceshura.com is a link to follow our legal case.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your story in a nutshell.
Well, I have to start with my beautiful daughter, Grace. Because, and the reason I start with her is because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her. And she had Down syndrome. And as I have reviewed and I've been trying to share on the rooftops, the disabled and the elderly are the low-hanging fruit in this agenda. And Grace's disability, having Down syndrome, certainly was part of the reason that she's not here anymore. Grace was 19 when her last day on Earth happened, October 13th of 2021, and I'm calling Grace's death in the hospital murder because of what they did. Specifically, without telling us what they're doing whatsoever, they combined three meds that you're not supposed to combine because they're contraindicated, and those meds were Precedex, lorazepam, and morphine. They gave those to Grace in a 29-minute window, which is what you give somebody in their last hour of hospice care to euthanize them. And they euthanized Grace literally in front of our eyes. And when it came time to revive her, we were screaming for the doc or for the nurses to come in and save her. And they wouldn't even come in the room. Instead, they stood outside the room and hollered back to us, "She's DNR, do not resuscitate." And when I say us, I'm talking about my wife, Cindy, and I on a FaceTime call. My daughter, Jessica, was literally in the room with Grace when they murdered her. And they would not come and revive her because the doctor put an illegal do not resuscitate order on Grace's chart several hours earlier.
Did you know that at the time?
We had no idea. If you walk it back, Grace's first day in the hospital was October 6th. We took her to the hospital because she had her oxygen saturation had dropped to 88% that morning. So we unfortunately perceived that as an emergency. If we would have never taken Grace to the hospital, she'd be alive today. But as you walk through her stay, and we'll get to the specifics of her last day here in a moment, but I was with Grace from the 6th until the 10th. I was taken out by an armed guard the morning of the 10th. We had 47 hours without an advocate. We had to hire an attorney to get my disabled daughter an advocate. My daughter, Jessica, ended up being the replacement advocate because my wife, Cindy, was sick. So during that 47 hours, we learned now that we have the lawsuit, we peeled back the records and overlaid them with the phone records. Well, we see in the records, they started Grace on the sedation med Precedex on October 9th. While we didn't have advocacy, they increased the dose of Precedex six different times. So they sedated my little buddy instead of taking care of her. Well, as you go forward to Grace's last day, October 13th, the doctor called us following up on a call the evening before. The evening before on the 12th, he was asking us for a pre-authorization for a ventilator just in case. And I've become a full-time advocate and researcher, so now I know why the pressure for this ventilator. That was the fourth request for a pre-authorization. And he framed it that these type of things tend to happen in the middle of the night when we can't get a hold of the family. And we said no, but he said, I'll follow up tomorrow morning to see what your decision is. So he called us the morning of Grace's last day, the 13th of October of 21, and asked for our decision on a ventilator. And remember, this is for a pre-authorization, just in case. Well, Grace was never a ventilator candidate, nor should anybody with COVID ever be put on a ventilator. Ventilator has a 90% kill rate, but a $300,000 payday to the hospital. So now I connect the dots. I see what's going on. Why was the pressure for the ventilator? Well, when we said no, Plan B immediately went into effect. While we were literally on the phone with the doctor, he increased the dose of Precedex to the maximum allowable dose at 10:48, the morning of Grace's last day. He started the day, you know, he asking us for the decision of the ventilator, but then he said, Grace had such a good day yesterday, let's get her out of bed today, let's get nutrition going, et cetera. Well, unbeknownst to us at the time, he had already strapped Grace down to the bed before the call and made her defecate in the bed. Then increased the Precedex to the maximum allowable dose while we're on the call. Simultaneous with hanging up the phone, he put the illegal do not resuscitate order on Grace and then combined those meds with lorazepam and morphine, like I said earlier. And ultimately, Grace's life ended because of that med combination.
Is this all under a directive of a doctor, or was it also done under the auspices of palliative care?
Well, that's a fantastic question. You know, because of these meds being palliative care meds, that's what got me into being a full-time researcher, because Grace did not have remdesivir or a ventilator like the typical 1.2 million Americans who were murdered in hospitals during this COVID lie. She was given these palliative care end-of-life meds. Well, she was not a palliative care candidate. I mean, he started the day telling us how great of a day Grace had the day before, which we knew because Jessica, our daughter, was with Grace the entire night. She reported Grace's oxygen level at 98 and 99% the entire night before. So it was pretty obvious when I started peeling back the layers and saw the hospital's capacity rate. There wasn't a bed on the COVID wing available. There's people in the waiting room. And I started showing my research to my wife, and she said instantly, Grace was worth more dead than alive.
I'm going to run out of time here, Scott, so let me ask you a bunch of quick questions. Were you hampered in any way of doing the investigation post her death?
No. That has really gone extremely smooth. We received the records, thank God, 4 days after I requested them.
And where are you today in the process of a settlement?
We are not planning on settling. We are in discovery right now. The case is scheduled for a jury trial starting November 4th. We have a three-week jury trial scheduled. We have depositions scheduled for next month. So I'll have a lot to report after the depositions are handled in May.
Are you going after the doctor and the hospital?
We have defendants, Ascension Hospital System, St. Elizabeth's Hospital, which is the hospital Grace was murdered at. This is a civil case. It's not a murder case. And then the five doctors and two nurses who were directly involved with Grace's death. The reason we took that extraordinary step is because hospitals are facilitating these deaths, but individuals are the ones doing the work. And so they cannot use the excuses of following standards of care or protocol for doing these things. And we want to expose this to the nation. This is going on. This is rampant, what is going on, Barry, and we're trying to expose it to the nation.
That was my next question. I'm hearing cases like this. I'm hearing some numbers. As you go down this road, Scott, are you able to see a pattern in the medical community as how they treated patients like not only your daughter, but just patients that weren't handicapped?
Yeah, the pattern is way bigger than what people think. They're trying to make everything about COVID so that we can turn the page. But this goes back to standards of care. Standards of care started in the early 80s, and the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, writes the standards of care for the entire country. And standards of care started with the idea that we need them to save money. But now that I have really dug in, I see standards of care are designed to hasten death. And hastening death is murder. And this is all under the idea that the satanic agenda to reduce the population, and they've implemented this population reduction scheme through the medical industrial complex. And the hospitals specifically are following standards of care that are, you can't make this up. They are designed to hasten our death.
I'd like to stay connected with you, Scott. This is fascinating. Let me say to our viewers and listeners, you can go to ouramazinggrace.net is a website there, and check out a lot. What's the other two? You have soundcloud.com?
The SoundCloud is simply where the deprogramming is posted, but you can find the deprogramming link to all the channels that we're on through the main website, ouramazinggrace.net. The other website to follow the legal case is graceshara.com. And Shara is S-C-H-A-R-A.
I am so sad for your loss. I'm trying to get in my mind when a decision to introduce palliative medication without your knowledge occurred.
Well, based on the timeline that I put together, it seems like it occurred before we got on the phone. Because there were the sequence of events that happened, starting with the phone call, looks to me like it was premeditated. And, you know, that's what we're trying to expose. I've been on about 800 shows so far trying to tell this so that people can be prepared for a hospital. You know, most of us are going to end up in a hospital at some time in our life, and you have to be prepared.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott. Thank you. Our thoughts and prayers are with you. Let's stay connected, and I look forward to seeing how this plays out. I think you are being used of the Lord in a big way. Some of these questions have to be answered. It's tough, and I want to say thank you for your tenacity and your conviction to stay at it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, God bless.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.